You're listening to The Takeaway.
I'm Catherine Lamfer here in the studio with Farai Chidea.
Hey.
We are filling in for John Hockenberry. All right, Farai, if you want to know what Energy Secretary Stephen Chu is up to, you go to his Facebook page. More than 3,000 fans there keep up with things like his recent appearance on The Daily Show and his thoughts on which feedstock grasses can be the future of biofuel. But, yeah, those are his status updates. There's actually his mandate from President Obama to make climate change a priority for the world. The Nobel laureate in physics recently came back from a visit to China, where he talked to officials there about greenhouse gases, but he came home to the clamor over health care reform. Now, when we talked to him earlier, I asked him, are you worried that this is going to detract from the climate change bill that's right now in the Senate? Democrats are short of those votes needed for its passage.
Well, I hope it's not going to get lost. I think both bills are incredibly important. And as the president has said, in the future, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, oil prices will be higher. In the future, we will be living in a carbon-constrained economy. It's become more and more apparent of the dangers of greenhouse gas emissions. And so we have an opportunity to say, okay, this is the way it's going to be 10 and 20 years from now. We can say that this is highly likely and position ourselves so that we can take advantage of what ultimately has to be a new industrial revolution to produce energy cleanly, to use it in the wisest way possible, or we can try to pretend that this is 1950 and let other countries take the lead.
How much of a difference is this bill actually going to make?
I think at its core, the fact that it says we have to use our energy more efficiently, we have to start to say we have to limit our carbon emissions and we have to ratchet down the carbon emissions. Yes, there are allowances that will help U.S. and different regions transition. But in the end, we're going to have to do this. Just sending that signal both to the private sector, to industry, and to the average U.S. citizen actually will do a real remarkable amount. Because once that signal is established, the scientists and engineers say, okay, we've got to do something about it. This is a long-term signal. Let's start thinking about it today.
You also, of course, are trying to send signals around the world. You were just in China. But there's a new Senate report that's talking about high-level meetings next week with both Chinese and American officials. And the Senate report says they better be talking about climate change. So I want to know, are we going to be seeing a Facebook status update that says you're sitting down with your counterparts from China again?
Yes. In fact, I will be. This meeting will be led by Secretary Clinton, Secretary Geithner, but I'll be participating in this meeting. This is a strategic and economic dialogue, and climate change is on the agenda. In my trip to China, every high-ranking official that I met talked about climate change, the devastating impacts it would have on China and the rest of the world if aggressive action weren't taken. So, and China is acting as aggressively in all the sectors, energy efficiency, clean energies, all these things. And in fact, they view this as an economic opportunity as well.
Now, there's a House bill on the environment that would put a tariff on countries that don't toe the line on greenhouse gases by 2020. How's that going to have an impact on your talks next week?
Well, I think that that's a much more difficult situation, and mostly what I want to do in my position as Secretary of Energy is to say to China and to develop ways that we can cooperate. What is not realized is the Department of Energy is in large part a research and development organization. We supply funds that allow people in universities, in national labs, in companies to develop new technologies. When I was in China, we signed an agreement that we were going to be cooperating on three areas in particular: building efficiency, transportation, more efficient vehicles and electrification of vehicles, and finally cooperating on how we can learn to use coal in a clean way, including the capture and storage of carbon dioxide.
Well, you know, I have to say, you know, the argument that you hear from both China and India is we are still growing. You've already hit prosperity. So don't try to shackle us when you're sitting in a position of prosperity. So how do you counter that argument?
Well, let me just talk about China.
Okay.
The issue is that, yes, they are still a developing country. Yes, the United States on a per capita basis is putting out more carbon, consuming more energy. So they say, well, we have differentiated responsibilities. But China is recognizing that we have to all be in this together. And this is the most important thing. China recognizes that if we go unabated, if we go as business as usual, the consequences of climate change to their people and to their country would be very bad. And so let's take a more positive attitude. Oh, by the way, this is an economic opportunity. We need a new industrial revolution. So energy becomes high technology. And, you know, this is where we're great. We have the greatest R&D program in the world. And if the United States says, this is where the new wealth creation will be, this is where we recapture high-quality, high-tech manufacturing, this is our future. And, oh, by the way, it's also going to save the world.
Well, that's a great way to sell an idea. You know, one idea that isn't going over so well all the time is the cap-and-trade system that's being talked about in Congress right now. James Hansen, one of the first ones to, you know, alarm the world about climate change, has said that the cap-and-trade system being talked about in Congress right now is a sham. What do you think?
Well, I respect Jim a lot, but I have to say that it has some real advantages. There are some things that we have to be very careful about. I think in the trading part, it's very important that we have very open, transparent markets, that we work very hard so people can't manipulate them. But it does have some significant advantages. But mostly, it puts a cap on carbon, and it tells the United States and the world, we're going to ratchet down that cap. And so capturing carbon dioxide, is it harder? I'll admit it is harder, but I think the incentives are there, and I think we can do the same.
I would like your 90-second pitch on just how imminent the boiling point is with our climate.
It's 90 seconds, how imminent it is. The effects of what we have done today won't be felt for 100 years. It's very hard for the American public to understand this. If we continue to do what we're doing, many, many climate models are saying there's a 50-50 chance if we continue as business as usual that we will be 4 to 6 degrees warmer Celsius. That doesn't sound like much. Let me remind you, where we are today, where we were in the ice ages, it was only 5 to 6 degrees centigrade colder. Very, very different world. Canada, United States, down in Ohio, Pennsylvania, covered year-round in ice. A world 4 to 6 degrees centigrade warmer will also be a very, very different world.
Secretary Chu, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Stephen Chu is the Energy Secretary. You can link to his new Facebook page, YouTube channel, and Flickr by going to thetakeaway.org.
Well, coming up, the best films of summer that you haven't heard of. We check in with film critics A.O. Scott and Wesley Morris. Still ahead on The Takeaway.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.